I'm telling you, Teresa is mean if we don't stay on time. I'm just, don't go there. All right, our next speaker is Dr. Paul Clayton, who will be talking about, or giving us an update of the Utah State Legislative Session from the perspective of the Utah Medical Association. And Dr. Clayton is a board-certified anesthesiologist currently practicing at Riverton Hospital and Intermountain Surgical Center. His past service in medicine includes being the Altaview Hospital Medical Staff President, American Medical Association Alternate Delegate, President of the Utah Society of Anesthesiologists, 8 years as a member, and Vice Chair of the Health Facilities Committee of the Utah Department of Health. And for 15 years, he was a member of the American Society of Anesthesiologists Board of Directors. He has made numerous trips to Washington to visit with Utah's congressional delegation and has testified before committees of the Utah State Legislature. He is a graduate of the University of Utah School of Medicine. He did his internship in Detroit and then returned to the University of Utah, where he completed his residency in anesthesiology. He's a father of 3 sons and 3 daughters and the grandfather of 18. He considers himself the black sheep physician in the family, where his father, both brothers, a cousin, and a nephew are all plastic surgeons. His oldest son is a podiatrist. Welcome, Dr. Clayton.
I'm going to switch technology to a Mac and see if that will work. You need to stand up for just a second. Just stretch, revitalize, get the blood going again. I think we have slides. Well, it's a pleasure for me to be here representing Utah Medical Association and a perspective on the last session in the Utah legislature. I do not have any commercial content or personal conflicts with on a commercial basis with the presentation that I'm going to give. In the legislative field with the Utah Medical Association, there are a couple of key players that I just want to acknowledge. We so appreciate their real devotion to this effort for us every year in the legislative session. Dr. Jim Antonori is the chair of the UMA Legislative Committee. There are about 20 other physicians that serve with him on this committee following the legislation, and constant contact with legislators to influence their understanding of our issues. Mark Brinton, JD, is our Director of Government Affairs, and the CEO of the Utah Medical Association, Michelle McComber, plays a key role. I was with her at an AMA legislative conference in Washington, D.C. during the Utah legislative session, and she was literally on her cell phone for hours communicating back to Utah and with senators and legislators in Utah on issues while she was at the conference in Washington, D.C. She's a great asset to us. There were several issues at the Utah legislature that got a lot of press this last year. One that Dr. Stewart has already talked about, medical marijuana. I'm going to talk about it briefly from the perspective of what was the legislation and what's next. Another one that got a lot of press was anesthesia for abortions. I heard this in the national news about Utah's passed a law that requires anesthesia for abortions. We'll talk about that and what that really means. Also, the Medicaid expansion got a lot of local press. Those who wanted to greatly expand and those who were against any expansion of Medicaid in Utah. So I'm going to start with actually the medical marijuana. There were two bills that were presented in the legislature. The first was by Senator Madsen, Senate Bill 79. This bill was opposed right from the beginning by the Utah Medical Association. Let me just point out a couple of the things that were included in this bill that made it very uncomfortable for us as a medical association to lend support. First was that it allowed use of any part of the marijuana plant. There was no control about how much, what variety, how it was to be used, ingested, inhaled, made into a tea or into brownies. Secondly, the indications in the legislation for how this marijuana could be used included a broad variety of conditions listed there. I won't go through the list in the sake of time. One of the points in this legislation simply stated, if you're caught in Utah with cannabis in your system, a legal defense is, I got it in Colorado. I got it there, it was legal there, so you can't prosecute me in Utah for having used my Colorado product. It also allowed for widespread growing, processing, and dispensing of marijuana and marijuana products. Literally one dispensary for every 200,000 people in the state. And incredibly, in my sight, incredibly, this bill passed in the Senate. It did not do so well in the House. Now, there was a second bill that also passed in the Senate and went to the House, Senate Bill 89 from Senator Vickers, which UMA worked closely with the senator from the outset in designing this bill. So it included only cannabidiol, less than 10% THC. In the original form of this legislation, the indications were to be determined by an advisory board, selected specific indications for its use, very limited production and distribution of the products, and required research to be done in using this as a medical treatment. Now, in the House, at the last minute, the fifth version of this bill was amended in a way that became untenable for the Utah Medical Association to support. And these amendments, see if this sounds like the Madsen bill, the amendments that were actually put into the bill at the last minute. The product can contain more than 50% THC. All of the language in Senator Vickers' bill that said cannabidiol was changed to cannabis-based medicine. And it could be grown anywhere, even imported into Utah from external sources. This expanded list of indications was amended back into the bill to be used from everything from HIV, neuropathies, cancer, hospice care, any kinds of seizures, chronic pain, intractable nausea. Basically, if you went to the doctor and said, I have chronic headaches, marijuana in any of its forms could be prescribed. And it included provisions to be used in children, in patients under 18 years of age. There was no research requirement. That was deleted from the bill. Well, this became untenable for Utah Medical Association. Our support was withdrawn, and this bill failed in committee at the House. Now, just by summary, this is going to come back. Marijuana is a very hot button topic in Utah and across the nation, partly because people are saying we've got an opioid abuse epidemic and marijuana is going to help us control that epidemic because it can be used to treat all kinds of things and it's much, much safer than opioids. That's what you hear. In Utah, recent polls have indicated that over 60% of Utahns right now, if you ask them, will say, I support medical marijuana. That term medical marijuana implies in their minds it's being prescribed by a doctor, it's a medicine, it must be safe. But the medical marijuana described in these legislative proposals is basically allow the herb marijuana to be used as people want to be used it, want it to be used. So there is a real need, and my plea to be, one of my take-home points for you today is please step up. I second what Dr. Barlow said. Please step up and help educate the legislature about medical use of marijuana in terms of quantifying it, studying it, using it as a medication, as we've done for the last over 100 years in the United States. We've based our medicines on scientific studies and not on anecdotal use. So as physicians, we need to step up and educate the legislature, but also the public, because the legislature feels the pressure from their public, from their constituents. And so we need to step up and educate the public about proper, appropriate uses of substances extracted from marijuana for medical conditions, and not just say, marijuana is a benign herb, let's just make it available for everyone to use for everything. Okay, I'll step off of my high horse now and move on to a couple of other topics. Anesthesia for abortions, very interesting topic. Senate Bill 234, Senator Bramble proposed this. UMA worked very extensively with Senator Bramble after this bill was proposed. It came out about mid-session, which didn't give us a lot of time to work with Senator Bramble. Originally, he proposed that you would be required to tell a patient who came for an elective abortion that 20 weeks or later, this quote, substantial medical evidence from studies concludes that an unborn child who is at least 20 weeks gestational age is capable of experiencing pain during an abortion. That was what you would have to tell your patients and then say, we are going to anesthetize the baby for this abortion. It would have required anesthesia for the unborn regardless of risk to the mother for her health condition or even a medically proven non-viable fetus, an anencephalic or, type fetus. With much effort by Utah Medical Association, this was modified. And now you may tell a patient that the fetus may experience pain. And you must provide either anesthesia or analgesia for the elective abortion. Now, as physicians, we understand the difference between anesthesia and analgesia. Either of those meets the qualifications of the bill. I won't say more about what analgesia means. We understand that. Okay? So that makes it much, much more tenable for us as physicians. And the exceptions for mother's health and for baby's potential viability were restored in the bill as it passed. Medicaid expansion, very complicated, especially with the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. Utahns send tens of millions of their tax dollars to the federal government to be redistributed for Medicaid care. The governor was anxious to try to recapture some of those dollars, and the legislature has wrestled with this for several years. It is complicated. Under the current federal rules, 70% of the Medicaid dollars come back from the federal government to Utah. Utah picks up 30% of the dollars for Medicaid. Under affordable care and certain provisions of that care, the federal government, as an incentive, would provide up to 100% of the dollars required for Medicare if certain conditions are met, and only for a couple of years in declining percentages to get people more on board with expanded Medicaid. Utah's legislature was very concerned about the future costs of this program. And in the 2005 session, last year, the previous year, because of the unpredictable costs and numbers of potential enrollees in the proposals that were there, expanded Medicaid was not passed in 2005. It came back in 2016. And legislation was passed in this last session to expand Medicaid to include about 17,000, that is the best guess, individuals who fall in what's called the gap. They're not poor enough to qualify for traditional Medicaid, but they aren't earning enough to qualify for the incentives, the credits, and subsidies provided by Obamacare. They're in this gap. And so the Utah expansion legislation that was passed picks up 17,000 of those in the gap who are above the poverty levels of income but below the Obamacare subsidy levels, and provides Medicaid coverage for those individuals. It also includes better access to mental health care for this population. So a small step, expanding care for our poorest of Utah citizens who need the medical care in an affordable way that Utah can move forward with. Now, there were some other issues at the Utah legislature which got less press, but as physicians are still very important for us. And let me go through these as well. There was a medical malpractice bill that was a great help to us as physicians. There was a bill on immunization of students. There was a bill on access to the controlled substance database in the electronic health or electronic medical record. There's a bill on nurse practitioner amendments, expanded scope of practice for nurse practitioners. There was a bill on prescription drug abuse. And there was a bill actually discussed, although it didn't make it to any committees. There was a proposal discussed for physician-assisted or prescribed medications for suicide for terminally ill patients in Utah. And very quietly passed, I didn't hear about this at all in the press, receiving credits for your continuing medical education by volunteering your healthcare services. So let me go through each of these. First is the non-patient cause of action, or medical malpractice bill, House Bill 79. A few years ago, the Utah Supreme Court decided that someone who was injured by a patient, that third party who was injured by the patient could turn around and sue the doctor for that injury. Now imagine how that door just swung wide open, that anyone that's being treated by a doctor who gets injured by that patient could turn around and sue the doctor. Well, that was just unbelievable that we would open that door so wide. So this piece of legislation was crafted with the input and support of both the defense lawyers and the attorneys. Okay, both sides of the attorney groups worked with UMA in crafting this bill. And what it does now is set a clear, high standard that a patient, that an injured party must meet in order to bring a suit against a doctor for an action of that doctor's patient. So the standard is that there must be a knowing and reckless indifference to the possibility of injury to that third party. So it's a very high standard that must be met in order to bring this kind of suit. And again, it was a unique coalition between defense attorneys and plaintiffs. That's the word I was looking for, plaintiffs' attorneys. And this sailed through virtually unopposed because we brought everyone to the table. Everyone agreed that this was the right way to proceed with the medical malpractice in this area in Utah. Immunization of students. This did receive some press. In Utah and other parts of the nation, because of objections to immunization, we are losing that concept of herd immunity. There are just not quite enough people immunized among the general population to stop the spread of some of these previously controlled epidemic diseases. And so legislation was proposed, which in general basically would have just required that parents who wanted to opt out of getting immunizations for their students would have to watch an informational video, a 15-minute video explaining this herd immunity and the pros and cons of immunization for their students, and then they could still opt out, but they had to watch the video in order to qualify to opt out. Tremendous pushback from the community on trying to limit parents' choices for their children. Now, at the last minute, the bill was amended to make it easier to opt out than it is currently, to actually make it less difficult for children to opt out of immunization. UMA worked with the sponsor on the bill, and he decided that after the amendment that he would hold the bill. He would pull it from consideration in the legislature. So that died and went away. We need to get more of a community buy-in and understanding in this piece of legislation as to what it, or in this concept of maintaining a level of immunity in the community that will prevent the epidemics of earlier centuries. Access to controlled substance database in the electronic health record. How often would you have liked to have been able to bring up your electronic health record and access that patient's records in the Utah State Clinical Controlled Substances database right from your emergency or your electronic health record? Wouldn't that be convenient and nice? Well, this legislation requires the Department of Professional Licensing, DOPPL, to have that very mechanism available and in place by next January. Simple piece of legislation, greatly simplify our care for patients and being able to verify their status with the Controlled Substances Database in Utah. Nurse Practitioner Amendments, Senate Bill 58, it seems like every year we get attempts at incremental increases in scope of practice. This happened again in the last legislative session. The bill that was passed allows nurse practitioners to prescribe Schedule II and Schedule III controlled substances without a consultation or referral plan with a physician if they have had 2,000 hours of practice or have been in practice for at least 2 years. So this will allow nurse practitioners to prescribe Schedule II and Schedule III medications to their patients without a consultation or referral plan with a physician. Now, they attempted to craft the language of this bill that would allow nurse practitioners, they always say in rural Utah, the underserved population, but of course state legislation goes statewide, to allow pain clinics. In this new piece of legislation that was passed, there's a clear definition of what a pain clinic is, and if a nurse practitioner is operating a pain clinic, they must have a consultation and referral agreement. So just one more step, in my mind, toward that independent practice by nurse practitioners, advanced practice nurses, in practicing medicine. We have to just be careful. It goes a little step at a time. And I think this is an area where we just need to be always vigilant as physicians in our practices. Drug abuse amendments. One of our great legislators, well, I won't say one, I would say most of our legislators, very concerned about the opioid abuse epidemic, the deaths, the skyrocketing number of deaths from opioid abuse in Utah. And House Bill 375 proposed that physicians would be required to check the controlled substance database every time an opioid was prescribed. No matter what, it would be required that you check the database. UMA worked very closely with the sponsor, the author of this legislation, and we were able to get him to amend the legislation to check the database as necessary in the prescriber's professional judgment. bringing this back to, we're physicians, we've been trained, we care about our patients. We know that some of our patients are on opioids for medically necessary chronic conditions. And we aren't going to be required to check the database every time that prescription is refilled, based on our clinical professional judgment with regards to those patients. Much more easy to live with. Interestingly, another provision of this bill is the more often you check the controlled substances database, you can actually meet some of the requirement, the 3.5 hours of CME that's required every 2 years to renew your license. You can now meet some of those hours of requirement based on the number of times you've checked the database. So an additional incentive for checking the database on certain patients to cut down on the hours that you'll need to qualify to renew your license every 2 years. And it includes some new liability protections for prescribers, which is also very helpful to us. So in the end, this is a win for us as physicians. Volunteering for healthcare services and receive CME credits. You can now receive up to 6 hours of CME credits every 2 years by providing volunteer healthcare at local clinics or wherever that might be. You get 1 hour of credit for every 4 hours of volunteer service, up to a total of 6 hours every 2 years. A very nice incentive for us to provide that voluntary health care. The physician-assisted suicide proposal would have was an attempt to allow physicians to be able to prescribe oral medications and basically cause an overdose death of their terminally ill patients. It had virtually no traction in the legislature this year. It failed in committee. But this is, again, an issue that keeps coming back. It's passed now in several states, and there are those in Utah who have an interest in seeing Utah do something like that. So what are we likely to see coming up in the next legislative session? Guess what? Medical marijuana, it absolutely will be back in one form or another. And we need to prepare now for how we're going to move forward with dealing with that issue. There will be more attempts to reduce opioid overdose and control opioid prescribing. There's currently a summit meeting scheduled with lots of interested parties from law enforcement, various healthcare providers, legislators, to discuss possible options for moving forward with opioid controlled substance prescribing and abuse and the overdose deaths that we see. We will see more scope of practice bills. They can pop up in each of our specialties. As an anesthesiologist, we have dealt with the nurse anesthetists, particularly at a national level, for decades in their attempts to expand scope of practice, independent practice of medicine. So those are things that we will be seeing next year in the legislature, as well as many more. There were over 100 pieces of legislation tracked by the UMA in the last session. Of the 40 bills that UMA supported, or 40 of the bills that UMA supported, were passed by the legislature. None of the bills that UMA opposed were passed in the legislature. As physicians, as a medical society, the Utah Medical Association does have clout in the legislature. That comes not just from the name Utah Medical Association, but it comes from physicians who are represented by the Utah Medical Association. From your input and your willingness to step up and say, wait a minute, I'm a doctor, I've been trained, I have some ideas about this legislation. So we appreciate very much your involvement, ask you to continue to support good legislation and the Utah Medical Association. Thank you very much.